From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, which means we begin by talking with reporters about what's been making the news in their part of the 21st state. Today, the communities of Rockford and DeKalb and the Quad Cities. Peter Medlin is education reporter for Northern Public Radio, WNIJ-FM, and host of the Teacher's Lounge podcast. Peter, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Thanks so much for having me. Always good to be here.
Also with us, Rachel Duckett, fellowship host and reporter for Quad Cities Public Radio, WVIK-FM. Rachel, welcome back to you, too.
Thank you so much.
And Rachel, I want to begin with you. A report recently came out. This is from the National Wildlife Federation, the Prairie Rivers Network, and the Discovery Partners Institute, part of the U of I, that looked at how climate change will affect the region of the Quad Cities. What are some of the top findings there?
Yeah, so it's the first climate assessment they've done for the area. We're right on the Mississippi River. So one takeaway was that there would be more Mississippi River flooding in the future, especially on the Iowa side, and that that could affect infrastructure. And that's something that our local governments have been anticipating. Davenport, for example, has been working on a series of flood mitigation projects this year. And another takeaway was that it'll get hotter. So it said right now temperatures in the area reach over 95 degrees for like 3 days a year on average. And it said in the future that could be more like 2 months.
2 months. Oh, my gosh. I know. Yeah. Western Illinois is one of the areas that's been forecast to see the most increase in extreme heat days in the entire United States outside of Florida. I saw also that the new I-74 bridge could be affected potentially.
Yeah, it said that it could reach some of the downstream levees and the I-74 bridge. It sounded kind of very like it's a possibility. It wasn't one of their major concerns, but it is possible that the water could get up there. But they did talk about some solutions. They made some recommendations, and they talked about what they called nature-based solutions. So planting trees and protecting buffer zones by the river and restoring floodplains, things like that, so that the water has somewhere to go.
Yeah, well, something we're all going to be dealing with for decades to come, I fear. Peter, I want to bring you into the conversation now and shift gears a little bit. You recently had a piece that looked at some of the obstacles for young people who want to become farmers. What is getting in their way?
Well, there's a couple different things, and really the story came out of the U.S. Department of Agriculture released its census of ag that it does every 5 years. And some of the big takeaways from that is that the total number of farms, the United States lost 140,000 farms over that 5 year period. And so, you know, they're also measuring things like young farmers, or the metric that they like to use is new and beginning farmers as well, right? So this is, you don't necessarily have to be young to be new. It's just someone, if you've had a farm for, you know, less than 10 years. And the actual number of new and beginning farmers actually increased a little bit. One thing is that it did not increase in the Midwest. In the Midwest, did not have any of the top 10 states that had the highest percentages of new farmers. And so really the big challenges here in the Midwest are, for one, 70% of ag dedicated land here in the Midwest is covered by corn and soybeans. And, you know, that it's highly productive and it's very expensive. And, you know, it's very expensive to buy the equipment for that. You know, you could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on equipment. And that's not even bringing in the other main obstacle, which is land. You know, there's a whole, like when we talk about there being way, way, you know, fewer farms than there were 5 years ago, we're talking about consolidation. We're talking about smaller farms being bought up by bigger farms. And so just land prices are exploding. We had in last year, a farm in Missouri broke a new national record, sold for $35,000 an acre. So as you can imagine, it makes it very, very difficult if you're someone that's young, that's new, that's interested in becoming a farmer, to break into that. It's extremely an expensive proposition.
And it takes a lot of acreage to make a going concern of a farm independently, at least. So, yeah, when you said the declining number of farms, I was like, wait a minute, where's all the food coming from? But so it's farm operations, it's consolidation. This is the number of individual families or farms that are farming land. But I guess the amount of land decreasing that's being farmed is decreasing as well.
Yes, yeah, and exactly like you mentioned, the total number going down, and just consolidate all the experts that we talked to about the ag census when they talked about it said that the biggest thing is if you had to describe the ag census in one word, it's consolidation. And the average age of farmers continues to increase. I think it's about 58 years old now. And but again, the interesting juxtaposition is that it's not for a lack of interest of young people. I mean, to just think about FFA, which is an organization that used to be known as Future Farmers of America. Now it's kind of an KFC situation where it's just FFA. But they have a they just hit record memberships, the highest they've ever had. They're almost at 1 million student members. So there is all of this student increase in agriculture, and obviously not everyone who's in FFA wants to be a farmer. There's plenty of other careers in agriculture, but again, it's not for lack of student interest. There's tons of interest in agriculture.
Interesting, and I did come across one more stat I'm going to share in some of my reading on this. Since 1950, the number of acres farmed in the U.S. has declined by 323 million, which is slightly less than twice the size of Texas. So think about that. Rachel Duckett, I want to come back to you and moving on to a couple of health-related stories. Doctors in Bettendorf were able to perform a first-of-its-kind treatment on a patient. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, so it's for something called peripheral arterial disease. That's where fatty plaque in a person's arteries reduces blood flow to their arms and their legs. And doctors in Bettendorf recently implanted the first of this kind of implant for a study on PAD. The procedure itself isn't new. It's just implanting a stent, which is apparently very common. It's a small tube that holds blood vessels open, so really, really small. But the design of this specific stent is new. Something about the cover on the stent and how that's oriented, and it's part of this study of like 300 people. That it's like a global study, so it was cool to have the first one implanted here. And I talked to the patient as well as the doctor. He said so far it's made his pain a lot better. So they're going to be monitoring him for about 3 years, but definitely very cool.
Yeah, innovation everywhere. Peter, sticking with, I guess this is health related, speech therapists in Illinois say it's becoming more difficult to continue in their field here. What's the issue there?
Yeah, it's kind of your classic story of underpaid, underappreciated, and overworked is how all of these speech therapists feel, where they're handling 8 clients a day, so 8 hours of actually doing their direct therapy with kids. And then there's lesson planning, report writing, having to deal with insurance and invoices. And a lot of them talk about how the kind of rate for insurance reimbursement, so for example, like for Medicaid, is probably the most common, that these speech therapists describe that as insultingly low rates they have, and that many of them haven't seen a rate increase in years, in close to a decade. And all of those numbers are borne out. You can check them out. You can find all those numbers online in our story. And so they feel underpaid and also underappreciated in the fact that they feel like generally people don't really understand what they do, what speech therapists actually do. It can be a broad term. And so, these are folks that work in schools helping kids with, speech delays, folks that work in hospitals with patients that have swallowing problems, and at home care therapists that, assist elderly patients with memory issues. And so again, they feel like they have to constantly kind of argue with both, patients and with insurance companies and hospitals to kind of argue like why their work is as important and as crucial as, something like physical therapy.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're doing our Friday reporter roundtables where we talk with reporters from across Illinois about what's been making news in their part of the state. Today with us is Peter Medlin, who is an education reporter at Northern Public Radio, WNIJ, and Rachel Duckett, fellowship host and reporter for Quad Cities Public Radio, WVIK FM. And Rachel, let me come back to you. There was some controversy around the Davenport City Council and its interim city administrator recently. What happened there?
Yeah, so the mayor appointed Mallory Merritt to that position by executive order in November. She replaced Corey Spiegel, who's the person who got that $1.6 million payout that the state auditor is investigating. And Mallory Merritt was also the chief financial officer at the time. So people during, public comment at these meetings, people are really skeptical.
Just to
People think
emphasize,
the
that's
mayor.
a $1.6 million payout for a government job for leaving. Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure because that's a mind-blowing figure.
Yeah, so that was to Corey Spiegel, who's the former city administrator. Mallory Merritt was the chief financial officer at the time. She was the assistant city administrator. So, it made sense for her to be the next person, but because she was the chief financial officer and there's all the stuff with the payouts and the, I mean, people are just skeptical there. There's a lack of trust for sure. And earlier this month, the council finally voted to ratify her appointment to interim city administrator. But they didn't approve. It was a memorandum of understanding, basically just this agreement that they had worked up in November, I believe, that included like a $50,000 bonus for Merritt and other kind of it made it really hard to terminate her. And that meeting where they were going to approve it got pretty chaotic. There was tons of public comment. One person from the council kind of had an exchange with one of the staff attorneys, and there was something else on the agenda to approve the interim city attorney. That got completely taken off the agenda because there was like an outburst in the audience. The mayor had everyone leave. Some of the council members left. Some of the council members wouldn't continue until they brought the public back. So they brought the public back, and eventually they voted to ratify the appointment, didn't ratify or didn't approve that initial agreement. So this week they brought up a new agreement. Her base salary, for her previous positions was around $174,000. So that'll have a couple kind of wage increases that I think all of the directors are going to be getting this year in the city, and then she'll be paid whatever the difference is. Retroactively to match the amount of money that the former city administrator made. And it also makes it like a little bit easier to terminate her. That was a sticking point again with the old one. So in this one, the mayor or any two members of the council could initiate a resolution to terminate her, and it would need a two-thirds majority to pass. So that approved this week, or they approved that this week, but it's definitely been interesting in those meetings,
Yeah, wow.
lately.
All the attention goes to national politics, or so much of the attention, but you just cannot underestimate the drama that can happen in local government sometimes. I've seen it myself. Peter, I want to come back to you just in a few minutes we have remaining, a couple of education-based stories. Community colleges in Northern Illinois have seen a rise in attendance in English language courses. Say more about that.
Yeah, so this is an interesting story where going back to 2020, there was a lot of expectation when the pandemic began that community colleges were going to see a big increase in enrollment, where they thought that students were going to be less likely to want to, go out of state for college or move in somewhere. And none of that really materialized. In fact, community colleges struggled with enrollment and have continued over the last couple of years, even if things have started to rebound a little bit. But it really caught our eye when last fall there was an announcement from Waubonsie Community College here in Northern Illinois that their adult education program since the pandemic had doubled in their enrollment. And so adult education is English, people that are learning English and also folks that are going to get their GEDs and stuff like that. But primarily the growth was in folks in their English classes. And so these are adults who are often, immigrants from a number of companies, countries that are coming in, and their community college is working with lots of different local businesses and trying to get folks to learn improve their English to improve their job outcomes, and they have different specialized programs for, they're recently launching one with a focus on welding to, just help people improve their opportunities. I know that my colleague Maria Gardner-Lara chatted with folks from Venezuela that have recently come here that are trying to, make sure that they worked in healthcare and want to be able to do that kind of work here, but with a language barrier makes it more difficult. So they found the program really helpful to be able to brush up on their skills and be able to improve their job outcomes.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I said two education stories. I was going to ask you about the Illinois Supreme Court holding oral arguments at Northern Illinois University for the first time, but we are out of time. So I will just say Peter Medlin with WNIJ and Rachel Duckett with WVIK. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. Appreciate your time.
Thank
Thanks so
you.
much.
Coming up after a break, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments from former President Donald Trump's lawyers yesterday, who effectively said if a president does something, it's not illegal. We'll talk about that with our Washington correspondent, Linda Kenyon, who covered those arguments, plus the latest happenings in the Illinois General Assembly, which is approaching the final four-week push of its spring session. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. Thank you.